Coming up on this week's show, CBS makes big news with a massive change to Champions League coverage. Our thoughts on the Premier League's big picture proposal. Details about more pay-per-view coming to soccer games. Find out more about your chance to win a Wolfsburg shirt. Our opinions about CONMEBOL's World Cup qualifiers. Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. I'm Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, joined alongside my co-host, Kartik Krishnire. And if you're new to the World Soccer Talk podcast, we're your weekly guide to getting the best out of soccer viewing options from around the world. Now, Kartik, hooray, international break is officially over. It's been a long 10 days, or almost 2 weeks, by the time the season returns this weekend, I mean, the European seasons, etc. It's I didn't watch a lot of UEFA Nations League. The vast majority of games I watched were CONMEBOL World Cup qualifiers. I had a chance to watch it through Fanatis, the pay-per-view. Well, it's a streaming platform, right? But they in this case, they had the games available on pay-per-view, as well as other broadcasters, DirecTV, Dish, etc. And the games themselves were great. Really very highly competitive. Peru against Brazil was a really good game. Peru had a couple of chances to win this one and really caused a shock. But it got a little bit physical towards the end, and Brazil came back and won it pretty convincingly score-wise. Ecuador against Uruguay. Ecuador causing a big upset there, beating Uruguay. And Ecuador showing some flashes of brilliance from what we're used to seeing them in the past. Really attacking, good flair, good football, and exciting to watch. Argentina against Ecuador is another game I watched. So on and so forth. Venezuela against Paraguay, surprisingly, was a really good game. Paraguay getting a win there with a late penalty save in that match. But the interesting thing for me, though, Kartik, was the interesting thing about this, Kartik, it was pretty strange for me watching the CONMEBOL games. I enjoyed watching them, but it's strange because they were completely produced by beIN Sports. Now, beIN Sports only had one of these games that was exclusive to them, but the decision that was reached, I guess, I don't know if it was MediaPro, which is the agency that was selling the rights to the CONMEBOL games. beIN Sports went ahead and produced it. They had their graphics. They had their commentators. So you had Phil Shane, Ray Hudson, George Metellus, Andre Cordero, Eric Krakauer, the usual suspects in a good way, producing the games and commentating the games. And the coverage was good, just what we're used to on beIN Sports. And they must have. I'm interested in what they did as far as this one, as far as if they reached a revenue deal, a revenue share deal, where they said, okay, we'll produce these games and produce them for pay per view, but we want a cut. That's what I'm guessing at. But or maybe they got paid a straight amount of money for whatever it would be to produce the games and actually use the commentators. That was strange. It makes me think. It makes me wonder financially how secure beIN Sports is, but that's a whole other story for a whole other day. But that I didn't have a game of the week this week, but I did enjoy thoroughly watching the CONMEBOL World Cup qualifiers. What about you, Kartik? What have you been watching?
Yeah, so I would have loved to have watched the CONMEBOL World Cup qualifiers. The pay-per-view put me off. I had no interest in the European break. In fact, I feel like the European matches shouldn't have been going on because of COVID. And unfortunately, in hindsight, my skepticism about it has been justified based on what's happened. But in terms of South America, I did want to watch those matches. I did follow each and every one of those matches on my score ticker on various apps, but was not able to. And then checked out the highlights after, but was not able to watch any live. I suppose the match I would really am unhappy I missed was that Ecuador-Uruguay match you referenced. We have seen Ecuador at times be aggressive and open when they play in Quito because it's at altitude, right? We've seen that in the past World Cup qualifying cycles. Uruguay, I think, has a phenomenal side, even with some of their aging superstars. So that was surprising to me. That result was very surprising to me to see them give up four goals.
Before you mention the women's games, I'm curious, like, why did you think that the game should not have been played?
Because of COVID. I think COVID is rampant throughout Europe. You're crossing international borders. And I think what we have found is the European Union has proven itself completely inept in handling this pandemic. So each individual country has had to take every individual EU member, and of course not every country in UEFA is in the EU anyway, but in terms of the Western European countries, each individual Western European country has had to put in place its own COVID protocols because the European Union has done such a poor job. And now, unfortunately, what we're seeing is by having athletes and teams cross international boundaries, you're leading to more spread. So
whose fault
in South America?
Whose fault is that, though? Is it the
UEFA's?
No, but doesn't it come down to the players? I mean, like Tammy Abraham and some of the England players going out partying at parties. That's not the fault of the federation or the football association.
It is. They should not be having these matches in the middle of a pandemic when there is no reason to have these matches. It's not critical. I mean, having Euro 2021 or whatever it's called, I guess it's still called Euro 2020, it's not the end of the world if you have to just cancel the tournament. It's not the end of the world if you have to cancel Copa America. But they're acting like they have to make up all these matches. And they're being a lot less vigilant, in my opinion, than they were in March when they prudently suspended the season and suspended internationals. The pandemic is as bad now as it was then.
Yeah, but again, I mean, these games have to be played. You got Euro 2020 qualifiers. I know, but what's the point of playing soccer at all then? Should we just all go inside and just not play games and wait six months?
We can play games in domestic leagues because domestic countries.
Yeah, but the domestic. No. MLS. Major League Soccer has had more postponements than any league.
But MLS is different because they're actually allowing people at the games. And the U.S. is a different situation because each state has different rules in the U.S.
Yeah, but it's still a domestic country.
This is my point. No, but this is my point about Europe. Okay, so if you have a league that's playing entirely within Portugal or entirely within the. Within England, you can control certain things. You can't once you have international matches. The U.S., you can't control anything because every state has different rules. So I don't think MLS should be playing at all. I agree with that. MLS should not be playing. USL should not be playing. NISA should not be playing. But in terms of Europe, I cannot believe they had international matches. And it's no coincidence that Cristiano Ronaldo, the biggest name in the game, now has COVID-19.
I know, but
that's a result of these internationals.
It may not be a result of the internationals. It may be a result of him going out and partying and hanging out and not taking it. Doing the whole social distancing and all the steps required. I mean, to me, a lot of this comes down to the players. The players' responsibilities to follow the guidelines and the protocols. I mean, with the Bundesliga, we had hardly any issues at all in the games that were played. But Major League Soccer, I guess in many ways you have, what, it was like 50 different countries really in many ways. Each state is so different. But as far as a domestic league, to me, that's probably the league that's been run the most poorly in terms of the number of cases, the number of postponements. We had another one tonight. There's actually two games postponed on Wednesday night. But I don't know, my take on this is that these games need to be played. These games should be played. These games are being played. And for the most part, the large majority, these games are going smoothly as far as whether it's international games or club games. Yes, there are sporadic points where players are getting infected. I think a lot of it's down to the players. I think they're probably breaking the rules and doing things that they shouldn't be. And that's not fair on the federations. That's not fair on the football associations from around the world. It's not fair on the clubs too. If these players aren't following the guidelines, then they're more susceptible to catching COVID.
I would agree with that, and I completely agree with the Chilwell, Abraham, I forget who the third player was, Sancho. Those guys going out and partying, completely inappropriate. if you had to play any matches, okay, Scotland versus Israel had to be played. The Ireland, the Slovakia, Norway, the Ireland, Northern Ireland, the qualifiers, right, or the playoff matches. These Nations League matches and these friendlies, they haven't needed to be played at all. I mean, you wonder. I know for you as a Wales fan, it's always you don't get to play England very much, and so there must have been some anticipation, even though you had a C team basically. You had a lot of guys that were missing for that match. I understand the anticipation for that, but at the same time, were those matches really necessary or friendlies necessary? Is the we're going to get to the big picture later. So I maybe we'll save some of this for that, because I think some of that applies to what I'm saying here.
Yeah. But the thing with the UEFA Nations League is that it does have an impact on qualification for major events. So, yes, there are glorified friendlies in many ways, but there are implications in terms of teams moving up those tables and ladders and qualifying for European tournaments that otherwise they wouldn't be able to qualify for them, which the whole UEFA Nations League, I mean, is kind of it's complicated, but there are routes and paths for these teams to actually progress and to actually qualify for tournaments. Friendlies out of the picture, but these are meaningful games.
Yeah, I mean, relatively speaking, some of these games are more meaningful than others, but in the big picture, none of them are really meaningful. The South American matches are. Those are World Cup qualifiers. They're late in starting qualifying. I understand that, and I think they may have more control over what's not Brazil, not necessarily Colombia either, but some of those countries aren't having all of these issues like Western Europe is all of a sudden again. So we'll see what happens when November rolls around. I mean, I don't know that we're going to have internationals in November.
I think we do. I mean, we've got World Cup qualifiers again for CONMEBOL. We've got the third round. And I mean, Brazil's one of the most number of infections as a capita in the world. And I think they're in the top three, you mean, behind what, USA and India. And you mean, so it's one of those things that, I mean, if you're to say that, okay, the international games should not be played in Europe, then maybe they shouldn't be played in South America also.
Maybe they shouldn't be. I just think that at least in South America, the games had some, from my perspective, relatively speaking, they're more meaningful games than the games going on in Europe. Games in Europe, you could say they're meaningful for this competition or that competition, but they really, I mean, we have to start prioritizing things in this day and age. It also would have been nice to give some of the top professionals in the European leagues that have had to play football nonstop since June or July, or whenever their leagues restarted, a little bit of more of a blow. I mean, I was shocked. I mean, I was, truthfully, I was sitting at a political meeting today, and I happened to be sitting next to our friend Neil Blackman, and I get an alert on my phone that England is playing Denmark. And I turn to him, I'm like, I've never seen a team play three matches in an international break. And he was focused on what was going on politically. He's like, oh yeah, that's strange. And we talked about it after. But it was like, I was stunned to see in an international break, they had forced three games for a single nation. I don't remember that ever happening. So that's another thing. It's like, I think they're just playing too many games. And they're playing too many games to make up for games that haven't been played in an era when, and again, I wasn't paying attention, so I thought England was done Sunday after that match Sunday. I didn't realize they had another game. And you're in a period with a pandemic where players are probably more susceptible and need more rest because of the pandemic. Instead, they're getting less rest under this regime.
I mean, the reality is that these teams are rotating so many. I mean, England, as one example, have got so many players rotating into these squads that it's not the same. You mean the same team playing three games in 1 week, and the reality, Kartik, is how many games from UEFA Nations League or CONMEBOL World Cup qualifiers have been postponed? Zero, right? I mean, there are incidents happening where players get infected. I mean, most of the games in Europe, you mean professionally speaking, the vast majority, 99.9% of those games have been played. And they move on to the next game, and everything's okay. Yes, the isolated numbers.
How many guys aren't able to play? I mean, I just, from the team I support, Man City, I can name several players who have been not played yet this season because they had a COVID positive test or some other COVID related issue. So, and I know that's the case with several teams. And I know obviously David Moyes. We've seen Alan Irvine manage the last two matches for West Ham. Moyes hasn't even been able to leave quarantine. So there are issues, even if they play the games.
There's definitely issues for sure. And actually, West Ham Japan probably doing better under Alan Irvine than David Moyes. but so a blessing in disguise there. But yeah, there's definitely issues. I mean, Liverpool's had some players too. I mean, you can go down the list. I mean, Juventus now with Weston McKennie and Cristiano Ronaldo. Yeah, I mean, there are definitely incidents. I mean, Napoli too. So, but what I'm saying is that the vast majority, I mean, I don't think we should go through and just start counselling everything. I mean, yes, if it is a health risk, and a lot of the Major League Soccer games have been postponed. I mean, in the last, Colorado's had, three games in the last...
Yeah, I'm getting a press release every day with another postponement from MLS. But I think, again, the U.S., in fairness, so we're saying we need to speak in relative terms, the U.S. is in a lot worse shape than Western Europe. And they have 50 different guidelines. And I think COVID is more out of control in the U.S. than probably anywhere in the world outside of now India and maybe one or two other places. But yeah, so anyway, moving on to women's football this weekend. Really exciting stuff between the NWSL and WSL. I wanted to focus for a minute on the way WSL was covered, which was, first off, Spurs-Man United, great match, even better match. Chelsea-Man City is my match of the week because I haven't seen, and I know people who don't watch women's football will get very offended or think that this is some sort of agenda-driven comment, but in terms of a good technical match of football, there are very few matches I've seen since, let's say, the restart in June, or May for Bundesliga, June for everyone else, that had been this good. I'm not saying that the pace is as great as the men's game. I'm not saying that the women tackle as hard and it's as exciting that way. But I'm saying technical football, organized, good touch on the ball, perfect weighted passes. When tackles are made, they're made in a very technical way. This is one of the best matches I've seen since June. Chelsea, Man City, once again, like the Community Shield, Man City, they just didn't. In spite of all the star names they've got, they just weren't quite at Chelsea's level. And we're really now seeing Sam Kerr get comfortable with the English game. And the other Sam on Man City, obviously Sam Mewis, the American, had a very, very good game as a two-way player. But it was just such a good technical game of football. I want to highlight the coverage. So NBCSN showed three matches this past weekend. They had the international feed calling the matches, but they were able to put their own graphic with Atalanta football, ATA football, at the top. And Jonathan Pierce and Laura Basson, in the two matches they called, made it a point to talk about the match being aired on NBCSN, make a point to talk about ATA football and to Atalanta football, and also to then mention that they're calling the match for the entire global feed. So, Chris, the big question for me now is the Premier League, Bundesliga, all of these different leagues have world feeds, you know, and CONCACAF does it, CONMEBOL does it, right? UEFA does it. They all have world feeds that we get for most of our U.S. broadcasts. This is the first time I remember commentators saying, this is a world feed, but we're also on this network in the United States, and then making some very specific comments. Obviously, the Spurs-Man United game had a large U.S. contingent on both teams, and then the Chelsea-Man City game had a large U.S. contingent, Lavelle and Mewis on City. But then in terms of Chelsea, several players who played in the U.S. before, most notably Sam Kerr. And Jonathan Pierce kept making reference to these players in both those broadcasts. And it did it very clearly for the American audience, very clearly mentioned NBCSN in all of the broadcasts. And I thought that was interesting because we don't get that with the world feed, UEFA world feed, when their Champions League games on, they're not saying, hey, you're watching on Fox Sports 1 in the U.S. or Premier League world feeds, etc. So I thought that was really interesting. I don't remember it ever happening before.
Yeah, I don't either. I'd imagine, Kartik, looking at the numbers, I'm sure you mean the commentators and the Women's Super League, probably looking at the numbers, they're probably, I would guess probably 90% of the global audience is probably from the US watching these games. You mean there's definitely a much bigger interest in the women's game.
Yeah.
In the United States for sure, especially with, such a successful women's national team program. And it's something that The viewing number actually from this game too. Like, let's pull that out too. It was the Spurs Man United game that was on the Women's Super League on the Saturday on NBCSN on a rare weekend where there's no Premier League football on. But 77,000 people watched that game. That was a 7:30 Eastern Time kickoff. So that's, yeah. I mean, in previous years, that's better than the Bundesliga. That's better than some Major League Soccer games. That's better than Serie A. I mean, that's a good number. And that's something though too that with NBCSN, the coverage there last weekend, which was, there was a lot of games on there. I think Jonathan Pearson, like you mentioned, Laura Bassett mentioning the US viewers is rare, but it's, you mean, it's a welcomed kind of nod to how well the women's game has been run in this country.
Yeah, and one other point I would make, Laura Bassett made a great point. I think it was on the Chelsea-Manchester City broadcast. The same team called the same broadcast was called United Spurs, by the way. But Laura Bassett mentioned that it's very different to play in the United States because of the travel that's involved and how difficult that makes things in terms of travel. She's obviously familiar with playing in the United States, and her husband currently manages the Orlando Pride. So that was a nice little nugget, because that's one of the things I always say. I don't like see things in black and white. And yeah, I'm pretty much a critic of MLS, and everybody associates me as a critic of MLS, or many people do. But then I will say things to defend MLS, like sometimes you can't compare MLS to leagues in Europe because the travel is so much more difficult in the United States, which a lot of even Americans who follow European leagues, they don't acknowledge that or don't even process that. So I have to say, I just personally really appreciated that comment.
Absolutely, absolutely. One more thing to add from me, and that's about the CONMEBOL games, the World Cup qualifiers. It was interesting to watch these games, because VAR was a major factor in a lot of these games. I mean, I think there was the Ecuador-Uruguay game where, if I remember correctly, there were three major decisions in this game where the referee went to the monitor. You mean, it was so close that the calls were that the referee himself had to go and check out the monitor to see the replay of it and rewind and fast forward and back and forth. Some of these delays for some of these controversial calls, it took 2 to 3 minutes. Sometimes it seemed to be like maybe even closer to 4 minutes. It took a very long time. Ultimately, the correct decisions were made in these games. But at what cost, though? Because there's so much stop-start, delays of the game. It really is a completely different game, Kartik. It's, you mean, when you watch a game like that, yes, you want to have the correct decisions, but you go like, man, there's got to be a faster way to kind of move through this, the reviews that the referees do. You mean, kind of in the studio where they're looking at the footage, and sometimes it's such a close call, and I don't know. It definitely takes away a lot of the enthusiasm for some of these games, or kind of the excitement levels. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news. And actually, first up is a question and comment from one of our listeners named Jason Ryder. Jason says, what do you think of the idea of the Premier League reducing to 18 teams? I personally always wanted to see it, especially now that I have been following German football more. And I really like the league structure that they have there. Most of us can agree to the reduction to 18 teams. And to me, that was a red herring, though, because the big picture really wasn't about that. I mean, that was one of the components. So to give our listeners an update on what the big picture is and what happened and ultimately.
So, because the EFL is having some money problems, and their football in general has got some money problems all over Europe, right? And there are numerous, I would say there are 24 lower division teams in England really struggling financially right now. So it might even be more than that. And that seems like an extreme number, actually, because when you say 24 teams. But the Premier League, excuse me, not the Premier League, a couple of big clubs in the Premier League decided to make this proposal, which would give 25% of income to the Football League, which is more generous than what the Premier League does for the Football League and for the rest of the pyramid currently, in all fairness, which that's what kind of got me interested, because I think people who follow me on Twitter and hear me on this podcast and read my articles in the past know I have a very deep disdain for the Premier League's attitude towards lower divisions, and feel like the Premier League is more of a breakaway, like an American sports league, and is modeled after the NFL. It's not a pure pro rel pyramid like some of the people in the U.S. seem to think it is. It's very different than the pre-1992 system in England, very different than the system in Germany and other places. So this would have put more money into the Football League's coffers. However, it also would have given – and I don't know what the best way to describe this is, Chris. Maybe I should just come out and say it. It would have given hereditary permanent rights to the elites of English football. So it would have given the Big Six – we know who they are: Spurs, City, United, Liverpool, Arsenal, and Chelsea. In addition to three teams that they claimed were three clubs, which they call legacy clubs, Everton, Southampton, and West Ham, effectively permanent status where they're getting more revenue than everyone else.
Yeah, actually, the way I look at this, Carter, is a little bit different. So. A lot of these clubs, I mean, the lower league clubs, and actually I think there's more than a couple of dozen. There's probably a large number, which is scary, in both the Championship, League One, League Two, and even semi-professional soccer too in England, that are really, really hurting big time with no fans in the stadium, you can just imagine. And so they've been crying out to the government for help. The government said, okay, let's go to the Premier League. Talk to the Premier League. The Premier League will sort something out, because they've got all these, hundreds of millions or billions of dollars coming in. They'll figure out a solution. So the Premier League, instead of saying, okay, let's go ahead and put together a plan that's going to help these lower league clubs, because they're an important factor. The important factor of the setup and organization of soccer in the United Kingdom. They're a part of the reason that the Premier League is in existence. I mean, these teams that get promoted and relegated, let's have the Premier League figure out a way to go ahead and give money out to these clubs. That's a fair system. Now, instead of figuring out some type of parachute payment or some type of payment to these clubs to keep them alive, they said, okay, let's figure out a way. And this was led by the chairman and owners of Liverpool Football Club and Manchester United Football Club, who coincidentally are both owned by Americans.
Americans, yeah.
And they, right. Rather than just figure out a way to give the money, they said, okay, let's figure out a way to use this as a power struggle, a power grab. Let's figure out a way to go ahead and, with the threat of a breakaway league if we don't get what we want, but basically is to really centralize the power. Instead of in the Premier League with 20 teams, each of them having their own vote, it's a very democratic system as far as figuring out everything from the way the league is run to TV revenue, which is shared equally, and then also there's bonuses for where you fall in the table. If you win the league, you get more money. If you have more games on TV, you get more money. So they have a system in place that's very democratic. But Man United and Liverpool and the Big Six, plus Everton, Southampton, West Ham, said, okay, let's go ahead and figure out a way and also get the approval and support of the Championship. So the Championship clubs and this Big Six plus three, so nine of the Premier League clubs, let's figure out a way to work together so that we can get a whole bunch of things passed. We can give the Championship teams a bunch of money only if Man United and Liverpool and the Big Six and plus three are able to actually make some massive decisions. And those types of decisions would be, and power would be, to vote on whether or not a club can be get a new owner. So
and effectively, Chris, I should mention that the way it was going to be structured, even though Southampton, West Ham, and Everton were going to have this built-in extra vote weight, also the Big Six could control, so they could effectively veto anything the way the vote was going to be weighted. It appears. So that includes, as you were about to say, Chris, if another club wants to get an owner, if Newcastle United, has a new owner, and these clubs, big six clubs, feel threatened, they could veto the sale of Newcastle United to an owner that would make Newcastle United more competitive with Manchester United and Manchester City and Liverpool, etc. I just think about that. It's just it's preposterous.
Yeah,
to even consider this a meritorious open league. So once again, we're seeing foreign owners, American owners, and the powers that be in the Premier League conspire to make English football a little more closed. And what I think is so fascinating about this, Chris, is this time they were working to get the small clubs, the clubs outside the Premier League, on their side to squeeze the remaining Premier League clubs, who are the clubs ultimately who could be a threat to them. Particularly, in my opinion, three big clubs that could be a threat to that big six are Aston Villa, Newcastle, and Leeds United. Those three clubs could have been squeezed completely in this scheme if it had gone forward. And that was probably, when it comes down to it, the real intent. Because we're seeing time and again, and I'm sorry to get on my soapbox here, but we're seeing time and again, these six big clubs are conspiring against the rest of the league and the rest of English football. They are effectively colluding with one another to try and make it a closed shop for those six clubs. This is not the first time this has happened. We've seen it in terms of media rights. We've seen it in terms of the way they talk about TV deals. We see it the way they talk about revenue coming in and how it's distributed. So I've been very angry about this. I'll be perfectly honest, which is why now I'm expressing my anger to the podcast, and I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about this, too, is that the reason that the big six clubs, which have most of the fans, have most of the TV viewers, have most of the success of Premier League clubs in Europe, and you mean the most successful teams, the reason that they wanted to get three more on board, plus the support of the Championship, is that in the Premier League, to get anything passed currently, you need 14 of the 20 clubs to vote for it. So if they were able to get nine of them together, and then there's the possibility that they could swing some of the other votes and get to the 14, if they needed to go ahead and get things passed. But the other thing about this, Kartik, is, I mean, to me, I find this disgusting, the way that they're operating, because ultimately it appears to be that what they're trying to do is really, it seems to be to go for a breakaway league, to say, you know what?
Yeah.
These top six clubs, yeah, there's a few other clubs that are kind of on the fringes, but it's really this top six clubs. We should be generating more money than we're currently generating. Why do we have to play the Brightons of the world? Why do we have to play the Newcastles and Crystal Palaces? We should be competing week in, week out against Bayern Munich, against Barcelona, against Atletico Madrid, against PSG. And really looking for a European Super League or some type of variation of that. And ultimately, it's all about the money, right? But the way they went about it was really underhanded, I thought. And it backfired. So the Premier League clubs this week rejected the proposal. And it's now back to the drawing board. So they have to try and figure out how to proceed and how to... I think League One and League Two will be okay. Well, they'll get a financial package to keep them afloat, those clubs. But between the Championship and the Premier League, trying to figure out a way to help the Championship clubs, that's still to be decided how that happens.
But I think it's important for our listeners to understand that these six clubs are always scheming. Okay, and they've taken advantage of a dire situation in English football to try and enhance their own power and their own revenues. And at this point, I think there were a lot of people saying they're going to break away at some point. Now, keep in mind, the Premier League itself was a breakaway, and it was a breakaway orchestrated by a handful of clubs: Manchester United, Arsenal, Everton, Spurs, and Liverpool. Those were the big five in those days. Chelsea and Manchester City have since joined that big five, and Everton has dropped out. Although, based on this proposal, Everton was going to be back in as part of a big nine. But that is effectively what happened: is those five clubs decided they weren't making enough money, they didn't have enough revenue. David Dean, who was the chief executive of Arsenal, was a Miami Dolphins fan, so he knew all about the NFL setup, and they've effectively mimicked that and broke the league away. And that's part of the reason why the Football League is in the position it's in. Obviously, we're almost 30 years on from that, but the Football League's revenues have not stayed – have not grown on the same trajectory as the Premier League's revenues, At one time, the Football League was completely linked and revenues went down the pyramid. Now they don't. They do in the form of parachute payments. This would be this offer on a big picture was a 25% revenue share with the Football League, which on the surface looks very good, but it also was then designed to squeeze the rest of the Premier League. So effectively, the revenues that would have gone to the rest of the Premier League, right, they were giving to the Football League, which at first had me intrigued, thinking, oh, this is them being good citizens. And then when I saw the details, it was like, okay, they're robbing Peter, you know, that whole analogy, right? So these clubs, just keep an eye on them, because they have all these ulterior motives when they make proposals, those six clubs. And again, it's Spurs, Chelsea, Arsenal, Man City, Man United, and Liverpool. They're all acting as bad actors right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's the shame of it too, because going back to Jason's question about reducing the number of teams in the Premier League, there were some ideas in this proposal that made sense. There was, okay, reduce it down to 18 teams in the Premier League. Go ahead and abolish the League Cup. You mean basically, is it worth it? No. Okay, it's gone. Go ahead,
and the charity shield.
And the community shield. Get rid of the community shield. So you get rid of some of the superfluous games that add a lot more congestion, and so far are not as exciting just because they're not as meaningful. And a lot of these Premier League clubs are playing even youth players or second string players in these games anyway. So get rid of
Let me ask you, as a Swansea fan, though, you won the League Cup, right? You're not going to win much silverware.
Thanks.
So
I know.
How fair is it to clubs like Swansea to get rid of the League Cup? Liverpool may not be interested in the League Cup. They're not interested in domestic cups, but they shouldn't take away that opportunity from other clubs.
Which is
how I interpreted that, by the way. We don't care about that, so let's get rid of it.
I'm okay with that, though, Kartik, to be honest with you, because, even in the Championship, the League Cup is not as important as it used to be. And even some of the League Cup games, you have Championship clubs playing a lot of their youth and second-string players. Yes, it's great to win. It's great to win a trophy. If the League Cup did go away, I'm sure the clubs in the Football League would probably come together and figure out some new tournament that would be, just Football League clubs only, or some type of trophy or something, as kind of a replacement for that. But that's the thing about this idea behind really kind of this project, Big Picture, is what they called it. Is it had some really good ideas. Except to me, those were red herrings. Those were things that they put in there to get the majority of the people thinking, like, wow, this makes sense. This is great. Let's go ahead and do it. But don't pay attention to the shift in the power of this and what they wanted, really, which is being able to have, the Big Six to have a really influential voting power on things for the future. So they could make some dramatic changes. They could say, you know what, we're going to do a breakaway league. We're going to have a league of, say it's 10 teams, and we're going to compete in a European Super League, and we're going to figure out a way to generate more and more money for these clubs. And maybe it, also, I'm sure, Kartik, this is part of the idea or thinking, at least long term, let's get rid of relegation. These 10 clubs are permanent. There'll always be the biggest 10 clubs in the UK, and there's going to be no relegation. So this would have completely, if passed, this would have completely changed the landscape of English football as we know it. It would have changed the TV rights. It would have changed the League Cup going out of business, Community Shield getting rid of that, forming some type of European Super League perhaps for the future, which has been talked about for decades. This really was a disgusting ploy by the clubs. And at the end of the day, Kartik, unfortunately, there was a lot of anti-Americanism in this too, because if you went on social media and read comments about Project Big Picture, oftentimes, even in the Telegraph, it was kind of positioned as the Americans are trying to do this to our league. The reality, Kartik, you know this better than I do, or better than anyone does. Most of the clubs in the Premier League are owned by foreign owners. It's very rare that you get a club that's owned by UK residents. Most of the clubs are owned by Middle East, America, Russia, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Chris, there is a different attitude and I have found this from talking to supporters of various clubs, toward if an owner is from Malaysia or Thailand or Abu Dhabi, like in the case of Man City, China, there's a different well, maybe not with China, but from some place in the far east. Then there's a different attitude towards those foreign owners versus owners from the United States. There's just an overriding fear among most hardcore football supporters that Americans are driven by capitalism first, which is bottom line driven, and that they would turn British football, English football, into the NFL directly like the NFL if they ever got the chance. So I think it's true the majority of owners are foreign, but there's a special contempt for American owners. And a lot of it is based on fearful stereotypes, not based on anything we've actually seen, but it's definitely there. There's a different attitude towards a Thai owner than there is towards an American owner, absolutely, among most supporters.
Yeah, and there's definitely a component to this, though, too. I mean, it's not that basically Liverpool and Man United being owned and operated by Americans and running those businesses very much like American companies. Man United taking in all this debt. Liverpool, to me, making a lot of good decisions in terms of the way that they're running the club, expanding the stadium, increasing the commercial side of the business, and probably going down the path of making some mostly correct decisions moving forward as a business. And Liverpool really, increasing the brand, increasing the number of fans that they have. So it's not that all Americans are good. I mean, there's definitely, it's like any country. There's good business people that know what they're doing, and there's bad business people that have no clue. But I just did get a lot of tinge of a lot of English soccer fans, and probably fans from other countries too, just kind of criticizing this because it was led by American business people.
Yeah, I actually got attacked by one fan randomly, like, "Oh, you're an American," blah blah blah. I'm like, "Wait a second, I actually agree with you," type of thing. But just basically, this was on Twitter. Basically, it became open season against any Americans, and I think a lot of American fans of the Premier League may not quite understand this dynamic, but there is a lot of disdain among working class English fans toward American owners because of this fear of the U.S. being very bottom line driven. And I think while Liverpool has been well run, Chris, I would agree with you. What has happened recently with Liverpool, which is the laying off of employees and non-investment in its women's club when compared to other women's clubs, although now Manchester United is investing well in their women's club. But when you compare it to even Everton across town or Man City, Chelsea, Arsenal, there has been a lot of concern that Liverpool is not being actually well run. They're being run too much like a business now since COVID started.
Right, I agree with that. So let's move on. The next news item is that this is a story that we have the exclusive to. Actually, we broke the story on I think Tuesday of this week. Is that CBS Sports has unveiled a new live Champions League whip-around show, and it's going to debut next Tuesday when the Champions League group stage begins. It's going to be called the Golazo Show. So Golazo, as far as kind of a really goal show, and it is a whip around show because it focuses on 90 minutes of all the goals from all the games being played at the same exact time. So what it means, though, from that 3 o'clock Eastern to 5 o'clock Eastern window, the Golazo show will be available on CBS Sports Network as well as CBS All Access. What it means is that there's no one game that CBS is going to show on television. Every single game will be available for the entire season and moving forward, of course, in English on CBS All Access. But the Golazo show, the whip-around show, will go from game to game to game. It'll begin with one of the games, probably one of the major games, and will feature commentary by Clive Tilsley or Peter Drury. It'll begin with that game, but as soon as goals start going in at the other games, it'll switch to that game, show you the goals from that. Maybe some other goals or other incidents or a penalty kick. It'll keep on moving throughout those 90 minutes. So for a lot of viewers and a lot of listeners, some will be upset. Some will be like, "Hey, why aren't you showing PSG against Man United? I want to watch that on television." Well, if you want to watch, if you want to watch it in English, the only way to do it is to actually watch CBS All Access. They still have the 7-day free trial to watch it on streaming, and of course, you can always watch it on your big screen by connecting, your laptop or phone, etc., or Chromecast to there. What about you, Kartik? What's your viewing option? So, like next Tuesday, for example, there's a whole bunch of games happening at the same exact time. This 6 games happening, and all of them pretty much are most of them are must sees. So, for example, you've got let me pull it up right here. You've got Chelsea against Sevilla. You got Lazio against Dortmund. You got PSG against Man United. You have Barcelona against Ferencváros, the Hungarian side. And RB Leipzig against Istanbul Başakşehir. And then Rennes against Krasnodar. So you've got all these games happening at the same time. How are you going to watch the Champions League when it comes to Tuesday? What's your viewing option of choice here, Kartik?
Well, if I'm able to watch it Tuesday, because unfortunately I'm in the middle of this election campaign, so it's a big if, I will probably watch CBS Sports Network. Now, okay, so I probably will have one stream running on All Access, but I think I'm really intrigued by this. I mean, I am. I think because, you know, we've seen these sort of whip-around shows on Fox and on 2DNA, but I think getting it as like the mainstream, as the number one option, it doesn't bug me. In fact, I'm really kind of intrigued by it because I think that there are, during the group stages of Champions League, we have seen how many times, Chris, how many times have we talked about, particularly since Turner got the rights, but even when Fox would show games, but there were clear tiers, right? The best game would be on FS1. There would be games bumped to Fox Sports Regional. There'd be games bumped elsewhere, Fox Sports Deportes, etc. How many times have we said, you know what, they should have shown that match on FS1. They should have shown that match on TNT. It happens every week.
Yeah.
So I'm actually intrigued by this as the number one option because I think you can't lose with this.
I think so too, as long as it's well done. So it's difficult because it is live. It's happening. It's happening in real time. It's very difficult to be able to monitor all those games, looking for all the action. But we've seen it done successfully. I mean, the Zona Football, we went to the studio at 2DNA recently. I mean, what, like 6 to 9 months ago, we interviewed the guys there. We did a whole piece on it. We did an interview on the podcast. And Zona Football, and also we've seen whip-around shows. NBC's done it with the Premier League many, many years ago. MLS has done it on NBC. I mean, you go down the list. Fox Soccer Match Pass used to have a whip-around show. It's possible. And actually, for me personally, I prefer it this way. I prefer it because I don't have one team that I support that's in the Champions League. I'm there to watch exciting soccer. I'm there to see the goals. I'm there to see all the incidents. And with Turner's coverage of the Champions League, I always felt that I was missing out because they'd have the one game, and oftentimes it'd be PSG against whoever. Before the game would start, they'd have a whole thing about basketball and Neymar and interviewing him about basketball. And I'm like, just get to the game, show me the game. And then meanwhile, the game itself would be a dead rubber. I mean, it's like, oh my gosh. And then you see maybe post-match, you see some highlights of all the things you missed. And you're like, oh man, if only I had known that was the game to watch. So I think that solves all of these things. I mean, for me personally, I will be watching it. I will watch the Golasso show and hope that it does well. I mean, thus far with what CBS Sports has done since July with the Champions League and the Europa League, it's been top notch. I mean, it really has been. So I'm confident that they'll put a really great effort into it. It's the first time doing it, so there might be some mistakes or might be some things that they'll fine tune. But I'm really excited about it. And if you're a fan of Chelsea, if you're a fan of Man United or a fan of Barcelona, you can still watch those games in its entirety in the 90 minutes, both live and on demand. There's the CBS All Access, or you can watch it in Spanish language with Univision or TuduNA or Unimas or Galavision. So we have, if anything, more choices than ever before. And just go the path that's going to be the most enjoyable for you. That's what I would say to the listeners. All right, Kartik, next up is a piece of news, not really TV streaming news, but it is news. And that is we have a jersey giveaway. And we've teamed up with Wolfsburg in Germany to give away their away kit. And have you seen what the away kit looks like, Kartik?
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, it's kind of this glow-in-the-dark. I guess it's dark blue or black. It's black. Really black.
Yeah.
With kind of the green Wolfsburg color highlight down the side. It's a Nike kit, and it's got it's got the Wolfsburg the VW logo in the middle. It's really an awesome kit.
So have you seen a picture of the one we're giving away on the back, what it says on the back of it?
I have not seen it.
Kartik, you're missing out. It's John Brooks.
Yeah, I know whose kit it is, right. I thought there was something, yeah, it's a John Brooks kit, of course, U.S. International John Brooks kit. What you need to do, folks, is follow World Soccer Talk, which you should be following already, in all honesty.
On Twitter.
And follow Wolfsburg's U.S. account, which is at VFL Wolfsburg _U.S. Like and retweet the tweet to win a John Brooks Wolfsburg away kit. And we'll take it from there.
Yeah, definitely. So this will run through till the weekend. There's a big the Bundesliga will be back this weekend, of course, and the Wolfsburg has a big match this weekend. So if you do follow at World Soccer Talk on Twitter, there'll be more information about entering there, just in case you forget. But definitely check it out. We're really excited about that. One more thing, Kartik, before we move on to the TV ratings in the news segment. And that is, I mentioned before, watching a lot of these CONMEBOL World Cup qualifiers on pay-per-view. Well, these past days, I mean, soccer fans in the US wanting to watch these games only had one option to watch the matches live, and that was pay-per-view. With the games priced at $30 per match, it's very likely that CONMEBOL will continue making the World Cup qualifiers available as pay-per-view only for this qualifying cycle. So the chances of these games being on television are pretty slim. The agency that has the rights to the CONMEBOL World Cup qualifiers is MediaPro. And according to one of my sources, MediaPro has been in contact with several streaming companies throughout North and Central America to offer them the opportunity to distribute the games on a pay-per-view basis. Now, with CONMEBOL, which is the South American Confederation, not being able to make any revenue from fans not being in the stadiums, that's the main reason why CONMEBOL is only offering these games as pay-per-view. They're trying to make up for massive losses in ticket revenue sales. So for soccer fans, this definitely sets a precedent that it's possible that other confederations may copy what CONMEBOL is doing and MediaPro are doing. But that's where we're at today. I mean, the business side, the financial side, a lot of these companies and a lot of these, I mean, football federations and confederations have lost potentially millions of dollars, and they're looking for ways to recoup these losses. One of them is pay-per-view. So don't be surprised in the future if for World Cup qualifiers, whether it's CONCACAF, it's very likely it's going to be CONMEBOL again, but even other federations too, that pay-per-view may be a big part of soccer's future. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV ratings. Not a lot to report. We already talked about the Spurs-Man United game in the Women's Super League, but France against Portugal on ESPN on Sunday, that was a mid-afternoon game, and 181,000 people tuned into that. And then LAFC against Seattle on ESPN on Sunday, and this was in prime time, and this was 173,000 viewers for that. All right, moving on to listener mailbag. First up is JP. JP says, "Think you're both putting too much expectations on studio analysis for the Premier League. For the most part, I ignore it, even for traditional American sports, and I just watch the games. All that's needed, it's a little lineup analysis pre-match, and then recap of the big moments at halftime, and then the end of the match, or cut to post-match interviews. Even the commentator recap and highlights from the World Feed on ESPN Plus matches are just fine. No studio at all. Not sure if the majority of viewers agree, but I think it's completely disposable, and the main purpose is to bookend the match and give it an air of professionalism and importance instead of the flip-the-switch method that FS2 often used for the Bundesliga. Now, Kartik, this goes against everything we've said and believe in many ways. I think that this whole, idea of just give us the lineup, just give us some highlights halftime, and then post-match, as soon as the game is over, that's cut to commercial, and then let's move on to the next program. That pretty much is Fox Soccer is their kind of their MO, right? That's kind of what they've been doing for years and years, and that's pretty much the amount of effort they put into coverage of soccer on Fox. I think in many ways, for me personally, I enjoy the commentators. I enjoy the analysis. I enjoy the debate and discussions. When it's done well, and oftentimes, sometimes it's not done well, where I walk away from a TV broadcast. I love when I've learned something. I love when I've seen something different. I love when I have something like kind of a deep thought that came from something the commentator said or something that the studio talent said. That for me is something that I enjoy. It's a bonus on top of the game itself. What about you, Kartik? Do you see JP's point though?
I mean, I see his point in the sense that it's better than not having anything like what we had with FS2. However, the problem I have is that NBC set a certain standard for this, right? And from my perspective, they've regressed when compared to the competition. And at best, they've stayed in place when compared to their previous efforts. I think they've actually regressed, actually. I think they've regressed relative to the competition. They've regressed relative to their own standard from beginning 2013, August of 2013, when they got the Premier League rights. So that's my real complaint. So if they had never set the standard, if they just had these 10-minute lead-in shows like Fox often had for Bundesliga on FS1 and no lead-in show like on FS2, then I don't think we'd complain as much. We take whatever we got as a bonus. Mm-hmm. But because NBC set the standard, that it's now, it seems like they're backsliding pretty dramatically. And as they lose talent, they don't adequately replace this talent. I've said this over and over again. So that's my thing. They set a high bar, and we're judging them by that high bar.
Yeah, the best example I can give really is the Premier League. And looking back to when Fox Sports or Fox Soccer had the rights to the Premier League, comparing that to when they sublicensed some of the games to ESPN, and you'd have a game on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning on ESPN2, and it was Steve McManaman and Ian Dark oftentimes commentating and having a pre-match discussion, halftime discussion. That gave a bump to the TV viewing numbers. People responded to that. That resonated with the audience. And then when they went to NBC, when they acquired the rights after Fox Sports, that took it to a whole new level. That was like something that we hadn't seen before with the Premier League. Just really in-depth analysis, really fantastic coverage, and a lot of shoulder programming, hours and hours of shoulder programming. And with the NBC, the numbers bumped up too. So I think the stage we're in now too, that we've talked about quite a bit on this podcast, is that we feel that NBC has gotten complacent. The coverage has become static. It's become predictable. Not as good as it used to be, and they've failed to really raise the bar to the next level. Now, who comes in to get the Premier League rights when they're up in a year and a half? Is it a CBS Sports? Is it a Amazon? Is it somebody else that can take it to the next level that offers the accessibility and makes it available easily, but also improves the coverage even more, that makes it something that's even a bigger hit than what it is today? I think it's a big component. It's a big reason we do this podcast too, where we talk about the coverage we do like and don't like, etc. Next up is Will, and this is based on a comment, or based on some opinions I gave in the last podcast, I think it was, where I mentioned that I'm loving these games. Games every day. I'm just missing the component of fans being in the stadium, hearing the fans singing, seeing them waving the flags, and just really that atmosphere that cannot be replaced. Will says, Chris, you aren't enjoying the games because no fans can show up because there is a pandemic. First world problem much? In case you missed it, pandemic. You may think you are being mindful of that, but you really aren't. And obviously, I know that there's a pandemic on. All I was saying is that I enjoy the games. I would enjoy them more if the fans were in the stadium. I don't want the fans going in the stadium if it's not safe, but I just miss that component of watching soccer. That's all I was saying. Disco George says, with regards to the threat of CONCACAF qualifiers being on pay-per-view, I remember trying to watch US away matches on that janky Go 90 app because so many of the CONCACAF countries had sold their home rights to beIN Sports, which was a massive ordeal to get in some areas at the time. Twitter was ablaze with furious US fans even before that game in Cova because they couldn't get Go 90 to work. Pay-per-view probably would have been a better experience than that. Go 90 made Peacock look like the best app in the history of streaming. The Go 90, it was free. It was from Verizon Wireless. It did well in many ways into getting beIN Sports into more homes in the United States. But there were some instances where it did crash just from the sheer amount of people trying to watch games, oftentimes at US away games. I miss it. I miss Go 90 because it was a good solution, a good idea. What about you, Kartik? Do you have any memories of trying to watch away games for the US men's national team on pay-per-view or other methods?
No, but I do remember watching the NWSL on Go 90 and I couldn't stand it. It was a horrible app. In terms of the US on pay-per-view, Copa America 95 is the last time I remember. Oh, okay. So there was the,
I remember that.
Was there a game in the 2002 World Cup qualifying that we had to do pay-per-view qualifying?
I can't remember that one. Yeah. I remember the 1995 Copa America.
Yeah. I don't remember. See, we thought we were going to have to do pay-per-view for Mexico in 2009 at Azteca, and then, NBC Universal eventually put the game on Mundos, which was difficult for a lot of people, but people discovered they had the channel when they didn't know they had the channel previously. But no, I don't really remember that, but I do remember the Go 90 app being very, very bad for the NWSL, the season NWSL was on there.
That's the other thing, though, too, Kartik, about this whole pay-per-view that Disco George mentions, too, is that next summer's Copa America, the rights have not beIN sold yet. When it was going to be played this past summer, it looked like Telemundo was going to acquire the rights. But now with the world beIN completely different, completely changed, right? And with CONMEBOL beIN the hosts of Copa America, there's a possibility that Copa America next year could be on pay-per-view. Entirely possible. And from what I can see and from what I understand, I don't have the numbers, but I can look at web traffic. I can look at the amount of people looking at pay-per-view. And just from this past 10 days with the CONMEBOL World Cup qualifiers, all indications are that this was a big success for pay-per-view. A lot of soccer fans were like, I hope this thing dies. I hope this thing is a failure. From what I gather, this was a huge success. Now, what that means revenue-wise, whether a beIN Sports or a pay-per-view provider was able to actually generate more money from these games beIN on pay-per-view and having maybe, say, 10% of the audience that they normally do, but having these 10% paying $30 each to watch the game versus 100% of the audience, and they're paying effectively nothing other than a subscription to beIN Sports. This, again, could change the way that we look at soccer, at least for the future, until fans return to the stadiums. Even then, though, you mean it's going to take time for that ticket revenue to generate to a certain amount where the confederations might feel comfortable in stopping pay-per-view. But be forewarned, let me say that it looks like pay-per-view could be a big part of soccer's future, which is not good news for the average soccer fan, but at least with the World Soccer Talk podcast, at least you guys hopefully will have a heads up and won't be shocked and surprised if and when it does happen. So we want you to have your say. If you have any questions, feedback, opinions about anything we've discussed or about watching soccer from around the world, in the US, on TV, streaming, or apps, let us know. We want you to have your say. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. And don't forget, you can listen to the World Soccer Talk podcast every week on your favorite assistant, including Google Home and Alexa. Just tell them to play World Soccer Talk or the World Soccer Talk podcast. And thanks for listening. You can get a new episode of this podcast every Thursday. We've got it released on Amazon Music, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. And if you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. We'd greatly appreciate it. And Kartik, heading into another weekend, international break is over. There's a lot of games scheduled this weekend to look forward to. What should you do?
Enjoy your football.